Whoa, hello, welcome to the Gundam Explained show. I am your host, Adam, joining me, as almost nearly always, and thankfully, is Stephen of Midnight Hatter. What's up, man?
Hey, how's it going? Hope you're doing well. Thank you for having me, as always. This is part of one of the best parts of my week, obviously.
I know, I love it. Our back-to-back, you know, chill and stream and talk and, you know, had your show yesterday, obviously, so if anyone missed that, check that out. And something I forgot we had talked about it is that link for the giveaway.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever you get a chance, grab it, throw it in the chat, because I wanted to remember that. Because, yeah, Steven, Midnight Hatter channel hit 4,000. Thanks, everyone that's been a part of that.
Yeah, thank you,
guys. He's got a giveaway going on, Lindworm, badass P-Bandai. We'll have that link up here shortly where you can enter to win that. So,
yeah, that is... Let me get that rolling for you while we go through the normal housekeeping, you know, show intro stuff.
Exactly. A little warm up banter. That's right. And Xionic Shadow, shout out. I've got the shirt on actually. Also, it's a nice quality shirt. They're doing a giveaway. Check out his links. Actually, the links in the description for this actually is links to Sieg New York, Xionic Shadow. They're doing a giveaway also. Cool. Yeah, good to see everyone. Yesterday, your show, a lot of fun. We kind of dived into some P-Bandai and talked about whatever, had the giveaway or talk about because of your subscriber count going on, so that's really cool. And the other thing I always like to do at the beginning is sort of like talk about anything Gundam-related we got into this week. You know, and I'll start real quick because I don't know how much you have, and sometimes I put you on the spot with this. But, and I might need your help. Oh, actually, speaking of help, I'm about to show you guys something. But first, there's a game we're going to play today.
I'm very excited about this. In case you guys don't know, this is a surprise to me as well. Adam and I have not talked about this prior.
I just came up with this. Although, man, I keep getting distracted by awesome content. Simply New Type is in the house. No, this is an X-Men podcast now. Almost. I have to hold myself back. There we go.
It's almost an X-Men podcast. Oh my gosh. I'm going to turn it into an X-Men podcast.
No, that's funny. Here's something real cool for all those that are listening right now and at your keyboard or your keys. Type in a name of a Gundam show or series or movie. The first one that's up is going to be what I type in here. So I know there's like a little delay on that. So this is what we're going to do. Steven, throughout the course of this episode, 5 times I'm going to ask people just name drop a random show. Okay, 8th MS Team. That was the first one.
There Thank it is. You. Yeah, I Peter. See it.
And the idea here is ranking 1 to 5, where do you put 8th MS Team? Only knowing one thing we're voting on now.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so I'm going to type that in here. And I'm going to put 3.
Yeah, I would probably say I'm going to do 4.
Good one. I was debating that. That's good. Okay, so what will happen is after the next subject, I will ask for you guys to post another random show and then we'll just keep going and see where we get to at the end.
Well, you know, that number one spot is always going to be empty for me. It's
I know what you mean.
I feel like the prank is going to be that, like, the last thing is going to be, I don't know, G Gundam or something, which if you guys know me, you know that I'm not a huge G Gundam fan. That's going to be like, well, I guess that's number one, just de facto.
I know. That's what could be fun about this. Anyway, I thought that'd be
this is a fun exercise.
Yeah, no, that's so I will. And if I happen to not bring it up again, you guys can remind me. To head back real quick. So there's this place near my house called Retro Madness. I think I've talked about it before. They have like old school, you know, retro action figures and video games. And that's where I went when I was rebuying Star Wars stuff like 5 years ago or whatever. And I got my first Robot Spirits there. They had the gun cannon, strange enough. And that's when I was first getting into Gundam. And since then, they've sometimes have built kits. Like I got an F-91. You know, it's sometimes when it's a kit, I don't really care to build, but they have it. I'll grab it. Yeah. I also got the Victory SNES, Victory Gundam SNES video game in box, nice. Manual, you know. But awesome. When I went there this past weekend, they had this little camphor. Now, ooh. I don't know what this is from because it is detailed. It is missing one of the Sturmfaust grenade things.
Happens. That happens.
Yeah. I think I saw a date of 2001 on the back. And it is we've talked about this before, Steven. It's more of that bendier type of plastic. It's fully articulated, but it's a soft plastic.
So it's probably one of those like MSIA, the Mobile Suit in Action figures.
Oh, okay.
Which, so like our mutual supporter and friend, King Dylan, I sent him like a little care package of, you know, basically all of the MSIA figures that I had from when my little brother and I used to play action figures together. And I mean, that line is fantastic.
Well, yeah, if that's what this is, I am shocked because my first thought was, oh, it's just one of those HCM Pros. And then when I held it, I was like, no, but it's still good.
It is, they are very, very well detailed. And I remember like even some of the battle damaged series, I think they called them battle scarred, for the MSIA figures. Those had like decals on them and like, you know, real type markings. Things.
Oh, sweet. Oh, yeah. Cause this actually has one, on the chest there, which is cool, which I always appreciate. Nice. But it's cool to know that they have some with more. So, not saying that I'm going to like totally jump into this line, but I'm always into like the smaller scaled stuff. But when they're like detailed and articulate, just so you can really build out a scene.
Now you said that they also at this store carry some built kits. Yeah. Like what do you think is the market for pre-built model kits? Because I've seen some crazy stuff online.
Yeah. You know, so that's a good point. Like when I go online too, is it like a lot of times you'll see someone where they just did like something badass you've never seen before. And it's like, oh, I want that variant. But then there's also the type where they just build the kit.
Yeah. You know?
And when I go to Retro Madness, the place near me, it's usually just built, nothing special. They go for about 15, which I feel like is fair.
That's extremely fair.
Yeah. And the Hobby Town near me has it where there's the glass cases that have people's figures they built. Usually those are a little more detailed and they're for sale. And that's the thing. Like, so for me, I'll sometimes buy a kit if it's like a mobile suit I want and I don't feel like building. Like, to be honest, they had a Marisai
built.
And I was like, oh, I don't have a Marisai, but I kind of want to build it though, because it's a main Titan sort of.
And I'll be honest, the Marisai is a fun build.
Oh, okay.
Like, cool. It goes pretty quickly. You know, it is one of those like dated HG kits that, but it's great. So did you follow that drama that happened a few weeks ago where the winner of, I think it was like a regional Gunpla Builders World Cup was trying to sell the winning model and they priced it at something like $28,000. And then he got so mad that no one wanted to buy this kit. And it's like, you know, we're not talking about like a commission where someone said, hey, can you please make me this custom, you know, whatever. And fair credit to the builder. Like this was a phenomenal kit with tons of detail and stuff. Not something I'm particularly interested in. It was like kind of a very abstract build, but you know, he was angry that no one wanted to pay almost 30 grand, almost pay for a down payment on a house.
Yeah.
For a model kit that was built, you know, that it was him, you know, it's like, that's like an artistic expression, you know?
Yeah.
And I always get into this idea where it's like, you know, how much is art worth? Right. And it's always just art is worth whatever people are willing to pay for it.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you know, some people are going to pay $500,000 for crayon on paper, but.
Yeah, this is a good point because I do feel like there could be someone that says, yeah, that's worth that. And they would get it. And I think that's perfectly fine. But I think logically speaking, someone could pay $38,000 or however that much was and put themselves through an art course and learn how to create the best Gundam. But like the guy being mad is kind of crazy because I'd almost feel like, sure, I bet you could sell that, but that's a large amount. maybe right. a couple hundred, or depending on if it was bigger or more elaborate, maybe a few hundred. Because I've seen some customs on eBay for 150 that are master grades that are tempting. You know, it's like where they actually convert it to maybe something that's not a master grade. It's only high grade. And it's like, you know what, 150, that's not bad.
Yeah. You know, I think that it really does come down to what, like, art is in the eye of the check writer. So I mean, it's just a fascinating market to me because it's not something that's very clear cut and dry. And, you know, as someone who builds and customizes Gunpla myself, it's like, you know, if I pour 30 hours into something, you know, what's my time worth? And, but if it's something that I'm only doing for myself, I can't demand that someone else pay a certain amount of money because that's what I feel I'm worth. And I think that there's like a conflation of self-worth and the worth of your art that's created. And I think that that's where the hiccup is. Like it would feel like a personal insult if you spent like a week creating this wonderful piece of art, this amazing Gunpla, and someone says like, yeah, I'm going to put like a $45 price tag on that. Then it's like, wow, you're not devaluing my Gunpla, you're devaluing me. And I think that we need to separate that. Like,
That's very interesting.
Sorry, I don't mean to go deep on.
No, no, that's the point. That brings up a lot of things. Even like today, there was a time where, because I have some shelves over here next to me and I have some X-Men stuff there now. And as I was posing one of them and I was looking at the pose, like my mind went, Adam, who are you if some random guy wanted to see your poses and be like, well, that guy can express that well. I was like, I have to dig deeper. I have to, and actually, let me show what I did. If it doesn't fall, is a Mezco Gambit, and I was just like, I got to think of something that's kind of dynamic, but I don't know. And it was fun to do. It was therapeutic. I was just sitting there on a call, just kind of doing that. But also, that also unlocked a memory. When I was younger, just down the street from me, it's crazy. I live next to like the first comic book shop I used to go to. And I had gone to a comic convention before that. And my dad would always take me. I'd just get a bunch of random comics I never read. But I would get these Star Wars comics. And did you know there was like those Marvel Star Wars in like the 70s?
Yeah.
But apparently they're abundant. So they're not like rare or anything. Right. And I had a couple. And so I went to the comic shop. I'm like, hey, can I sell this to you? Like, and I was maybe 9 or 10 or 11, probably. And he's like, do you know how much it's worth? And he looks at it, and I could tell, like, he knew what I was trying to get at. And he's like, well, it's only worth as much as someone's going to pay for it. And it took me a second. And I was like, wow. And my little brain, like, has always then thought that ever since then. It's like I thought I had something rare. It was an old Star Wars comic, but it was really not worth anything because there's so many out there. If someone wanted it, they could get it.
Right.
Even though it is artwork, but a lot of times the artwork that goes for a lot is when it's like just an exclusive. There's just one, you know, someone just made that one.
And you really never know what especially in comics, like that's a whole other, you know, realm of collector's item where, you know, you never know what is going to be worth what until something happens that becomes worthwhile noting, right? So, like, the first appearance of Iron Man was in, what, Strange Adventures? Like, the Marvel Strange Adventures line?
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't even, like, an Iron Man comic, but it was, like, or Mystery, Strange Mysteries, something like that. So, I remember the local comic shop that I used to go to, Velocity Comics, they had a first like that edition of that comic. It wasn't very highly CGC rated, so it was around like $512 if I remember correctly, and this was like back in 2010. And I was looking at it, and at the time I was such a huge Iron Man fan, I was like, man, you know, I could sell one of my guitars and get that comic book. Whoa. And I was talking to the comic book store owner, Pat, and he was like, yeah, but you can't play that comic book. And ultimately, that one is not even really rated that highly. Like, you could get a better one. He's like, I put that price on there almost to discourage people
from buying it. So he can actually kind of have it. But if someone really wanted it, he'd get some good money for it.
Exactly. So, you know, it's so interesting. And it goes back to what exactly what you said. It's worth whatever someone is willing to pay for it, which...
And that has helped me in my Gundam collecting, where there might be something that I know I could get cheaper, but when... And it's like, to me, this is worth paying more for. Like, for a lot of times, the used cost signature robot spirits, for instance, those are a bit pricey just because it's the cost signature. But I really like those. that's a neat one. And man, to even go further down that X-Men rabbit hole, that comic shop too, that's down the street, was where I bought my favorite Cyclops action figure back then. It was the first Jim Lee one, and he would light up and had a backpack that had a thing that went over for some reason. And then,
there were a lot of weird gimmicks.
And there was a Kroger. There's a Kroger right where I am too, and that's where I got my Iceman back in the day, the one that you put in the freezer.
I love that.
That stuff is so,
so awesome.
Okay, real quick, chat. Get your fingers ready. Someone name another Gundam show or movie, because then we're gonna do this next one. Okay, someone said 0083 Ultronimus. All right.
Where are you going to put that one, Adam?
Oh God, I'm going to put 4. What about you?
I'll give this one a 3.
Okay.
I like 0083 more than 8th MS Team. That's
I feel for me that could be interchangeable. I think. Okay, that's cool.
I feel like you and I are both slow playing this conservatively.
And I like some of the things that were said there, like G-Savior, shout out.
Hey, I was wondering if G-Savior was going to drop, and I know exactly where I would put that one, too. So,
all right. Okay, we'll do this again here in a few minutes. but you had something X-Men related you were just showing?
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, this... we talked about this yesterday on my show, because because obviously with X-Men 97... X-Men's all the rage again, which is crazy.
I believe.
You and I talked a little bit about the HeroClix tabletop game. This Sentinel is actually missing his base. I think it's actually in the box behind me, but this is one of the Sentinel figures. It actually has you can swap the hands out, which was an interesting gimmick. But yeah, I mean, if you want, we've got plenty of visual aids to go around.
That's pretty neat, because I didn't realize they made them that big, but the idea is holy macaroni.
Yeah, we've got quite a few Marvel and DC characters in here.
The size of a standard figure. I'm really curious.
Oh yeah, so let's see if I can find a good example of a here we go. Here's a Captain America. This one's a unique figure because it's actually spread across two bases.
And so he's got like a range or something like that?
Yeah, so it makes him a little easier to hit, but then he also has a little bit more range, things like that. Looks like I've got an Iron Man here. So that will be the size of like an average figure.
I like that. Easy to store when you're done.
Yeah.
I like this.
You and I were talking about like some of the sculpt quality on these. Like this is that Ben Reilly Spider-Man. Speaking of 90s cartoons, you know. Yeah. Here we go. This is perfect because you and I were just talking about this. You know, you were showing off your Gambit pose.
Ooh. Well,
here is what a Gambit sculpt.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if this maybe I need to like get my hand up so we can refocus it, but this is actually a pretty sweet figure because he is like kind of bounding off of a Sentinel arm.
Oh, that's sick.
And throwing three cards.
I like that. And so when was the last time you bought one? How many years has it been? Is that like a 15-year thing?
Probably about 2011.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, okay, that's almost, 15 years. Wow, I didn't realize how.
Right, yeah.
But that is neat because that went up pretty far then. Because in my mind, I'm thinking like late 90s, early 2000s, but... Oh, blur alert, by the way. You might want
to give your
camera handy. There you go. That was really crazy of me to refer to giving the camera handy as a way to unblur it, but I said it.
Now, like you said, there is, like, you know, there's certain value that's associated with certain things. So, like, for instance, this particular Wolverine figure is kind of garbage when it comes to the actual gameplay of HeroClix. But this one is unique because it's a special mold of him, like, in the hand uniform, like when he was a ninja.
Oh, that's sweet. So, hey, do you have a Green Lantern? Well, Tronimus is asking.
Not only do I have Green Lanterns, let me see if I can pull this guy out. I was just looking at him a moment ago. I do have a Green Lantern in there. I have a couple of different ones, like for the different Green Lanterns, but I also have one of the limited edition. There was a Yellow Lantern, and it was like, it was Green Lantern, but like, you know how Superman has Bizarro? This was like Yellow Lantern. It was like Hal Jordan, and he's like shooting himself in the face with the yellow light.
Oh, wow. That's, yeah, I did look up online, and some of those are pretty interesting, but that's the thing. These things are like a few bucks, maybe up to 10 bucks each on eBay. It seemed like a lot had been produced when we're talking about rarity here. Like,
yeah,
these are things that I think could easily be got.
Well, here we go. So we've got a couple of Yellow Lanterns here. This one is the, so this is that Bizarro Yellow Lantern. Let's see if we can get him to focus in. And then we've also got Scarecrow, the Batman villain.
Oh, that's pretty
neat. As a Yellow Lantern.
Interesting. Huh. Yeah, I think just because of how cheap they are and how easily I can store them, you know, it's not like something that's going to be taking a route. I think I'm going to get into this.
I feel so bad. I'm like, I need to write an apology note to your wife and kids. Like, I'm sorry that I got Adam hooked on another thing that he's going to be collecting.
It's more because I could see that it's something my youngest really likes too, because the Gundam never clicked with him.
But X-Men.
X-Men is clicking with him. And yeah. I think that's really cool. Well, cool. Yeah, that's awesome. I'm glad you showed that off. And I'm going to do this real quick again. If someone can name another show or movie, and then I'm going to type that. Oh, wait, I forgot. I got to put 0083.
To be perfectly honest, I haven't been keeping up with X-Men 97 as closely as like you and Kyle have. So,
Yeah, when you get a time to, I think it helps because also like when I wake up in the morning, you know, I'm usually the first one up, and on Wednesdays, my youngest is like, yeah, wake me up too. And then we go watch it. Yeah, so it's pretty cool.
I love that.
And even the days like this morning when there's not a new episode, we're watching the old ones. And nice. I'm actually shocked how good the old ones are, like even more so than I was. But anyway, we've got Thunderbolt next.
Ooh, Thunderbolt.
Because I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to put two.
You know what? I'm going to go reverse on that. I'm going to go five.
Cool. I can't wait to see what happens.
Yeah, this is fun.
Okay. Actually, yeah, let me go back to my screen share real quick. Speaking of like these, you know, plastic action figures, you know, we got the MSIA. That Gundam Universe line is not bad.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I don't know if, I don't know. Tell me in the chat if you guys collect these at all. I have inadvertently, like, when it's like, oh, I should check this out for the channel, but then, like, oh, the Sotheby's on clearance for $11. Yeah, might as well.
right.
Or, yeah, when I'm at Ross and I see an Easy 8, and it's like, when do you see an Easy 8 at Ross? In whatever form it may be. Even if it was a body pillow, I would get an Easy 8. no. Tell me honestly, if you went to Ross and you saw an Easy 8 body pillow for $5, wouldn't you buy it?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It just seems like, yeah, one of those things.
It's like a no-brainer.
So this line's pretty cool. I have a bunch, although they're actually in storage. But, like, sometimes I look back and appreciate them. They are more of the Marvel Legends, you know, when it comes to, like, the Gundam action figures. Because Robot Spirit's the high end in these, you know, cheaper Gundam Universe are plasticky. So they just announced what they're going to be coming out with for the fall. Obviously, I'm looking at UC stuff, but curious what outside of UC.
Of course.
Strike Freedom Gundam Type 2. So this makes it, you know, the gold version, which I guess was that like at the end of Seed? Because I forget. Like,
I think so. If not, yeah. If not Seed, then Seed Destiny.
And was it called a Type 2 also? Or are they calling it for this? That I don't know.
I don't remember a Type 2 in the name of it. I think that that's probably just like a delineation for the toy.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was wondering. And Neon Wave is saying Seed Destiny, so thank you.
Yeah.
Ultronimus is confirming that. Thanks, guys. So, yeah, that's what's interesting. When I saw the Type 2, I didn't know if, that was the toy, like, delineation or, I've never heard it in the name, though. So, yeah. Okay.
And we had that same conversation back when I built that, I don't know, you can probably see it just barely out of screen on the shelf there, that, Geno Breaker repackage version. You know, I was like, repackage version, that like something, I don't remember that from the show. Oh. And that was like, that was specific to the toy. It was like, or the model kit, I should say. It was like, that model kit is the repackage version of the.
And so that's what's interesting. I'm wondering if that means that this Type 2, maybe they have enhanced some engineering, because I'm always interested with, like, when it comes to a line of figures, how they evolve and enhance some engineering.
Definitely.
Let's see. Something says complete with display stages. Oh.
Interesting.
So maybe that's what it is. Maybe they're re-releasing. So here's the other one. It's the Gundam Barbados Lupus.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. And
not a lot of accessories with that compared to the Strike Freedom.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think that's how they kind of were, right? From IBO, they were just like big. And I still need to finish that. Oh my god, who am I doing this show? Here's another one: the Gundam Astray Red Frame. Now, this is just badass, regardless of what it's from. Just, you know, a Gundam looking like this, completely badass.
That's one of the things about like the Astray. Like all of that stuff is like it does feel closer to UC, the designs, than it does Seed.
I agree. And because that was one thing that you don't know if you don't know, but like the Gundam designs are very, you know, Japanese aesthetic, the cultural, like, history, samurai and stuff. And I've always been into samurai, so that was something. You know, when I was getting into Gundam, I'm seeing, this very culturally Japanese influence. So we see the samurai stuff, and this one does it for sure.
Now, this is an interesting one, because I think I saw when you were scrolling there that it, in the accessories, comes with a sheathed sword and then an unsheathed sword. So it's not even like that it comes with a sheath and a sword that you can put in. It's like...
Oh, it's, yeah. Yeah, sheath state and sword state. I like how it's the state of the...
Yeah. We have a state machine.
you know, and that is pretty cool. Like, or is it? Because wouldn't I want an empty sheath on the figure as it's holding its sword? They effed up.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Petition.org. I got to. Shut it down. No, that was about it. So nothing you see, but I think it's cool that they continue to come out with these. I feel like the next step is, they almost did it with the Sazabi because it was bigger, but to have like, what's some big, like, not necessarily a play set, but something that could be part of a thing, like the Opsalus, I think would be a great idea.
Yeah, that's a great option. I'm always disappointed though sometimes with the Gundam Universe figures at like the selection of accessories that come with them. So like instance, I have the new Gundam, and I don't think that the new Gundam came with its beam rifle. I think it only came with the fin funnels and a beam saber.
Yeah, they're all like that. That's true. So yeah. That's the thing too, because you'll compare that to like maybe an entry grade you might see, and an entry grade, it like doesn't have everything. And there's that kind of, I guess, expectation we have where it like needs to have certain accessories. And I think they did that with the RX-78 too. They had like an entry grade version and then another version that had the extra accessories, or that was a high grade maybe.
Well, they have like the it's like an add-on pack for the entry grade that just comes with the weapons.
Yeah. But so, yeah, the Gundam Universe, like, I wonder, I'm actually surprised this line keeps going. Does it sell? Does Bandai plan their things like, we will support something for a certain period of time no matter what? or because like I feel like they could come out with additional stuff to kind of support this kind of play style, whether it's like hangers or damaged like battle scene stuff. Like,
yeah. So like, now I'm curious about this price though. Like, so September 2024 collection is priced at 3,300 yen each, which I guess is roughly $33. Like,
yeah,
you know,
so it's a little more than the standard. And I wonder if it's because of this whole thing about
display stages,
which is new.
Because typically they're much, much less expensive than that.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like 25 maybe at the most, or if you get like the bigger ones, the deluxe, like the Sazabi, that was like 30 something.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Interesting.
It'll be interesting to see. Okay. Next thing that I didn't notice, we were talking about P Bandai yesterday.
Yeah.
But they actually have Amuro's DJ or DJ. We don't have Talos here to help.
there you go. Yeah.
But like, I would get this because it's Amuro's, you know?
But isn't every DJ an Amuro DJ? Like, was there another DJ pilot that I don't know about?
Well, I think it's because in Moon, this is like the Moon Gundam special Amuro version. Like, it even says Amuro. But I see what you're saying, because he piloted in Zeta and everything. But I just love when there's these Amuro customs.
Yeah, and that's always cool.
And it has a little bit of that Moon aesthetic to it. Just slightly. You know how there's that slight redesign?
Yeah.
And then that beam rifle. I don't know much about this beam rifle, but it looks like a Zeta beam rifle.
Yeah, know? It does look like the Hyper Mega Launcher from the Hyper Zeta.
Mega Launcher. Thank you. There's so many ways you can call a giant gun.
Right.
No. Yeah, that... okay, so maybe let's look at that, because I brought up the Wikipedia just in case.
Always nice, yes.
So one, the colors are different. So this has more of a pinkish red, I guess.
Yeah.
Whereas the one on the wiki is like an orange. I kind of like the orange, to be honest. Let's see.
Shield is pretty sweet looking.
Oh, was
that like...
Yeah, because it's almost Xeon-like.
Yeah.
Wait, let's look at this and see. Okay, it does have it too, because it's like holding the...
Yeah, it's kind of like folded up, but yeah, it is there.
Is it there? Actually, it might not be.
Oh.
Because it's like the shoulder part is there.
Yeah, like the spikes that come off the shoulder.
Yeah, but not the... And then there's a shield on the other side. So you know what? I don't even know how accurate this is. Pre-ordered canceled. No, I'm joking. But it's... No, but still, let's... I wanted to look at some of the lore behind this. So developed from the 008 DJ, the 008R RIC DJ is a high-performance space use mobile suit assigned by the top brass of the newly formed elite unit Londo Bell for Amuro Ray. What is it? This is because the main mobile suit currently used by the Earth Federation forces, and currently this is in around 89, I guess. I guess what, right before all the Shars counterattack nonsense, because I guess the GM3 was the main Earth Federation suit at that time.
Yeah, they probably didn't even have like Jagans yet.
Right. Okay. It has stuff on it for better space use. Additionally, a pair of binders. Added to the back. Okay. Yeah, it's, you know, that's pretty cool. I'm actually now disappointed that the colors don't match, but there's got to be a reason for that.
I do think that the wing binders on the back of the robot spirits look more accurate than what was in the concept art, because these they look exactly like what you see on the back of the RIC Dias, which is what the lore says. Like, you know, they adapted those wing binders from the RIC Dias, but then like this image, that does not look like a RIC Dias from behind, I should say.
Yeah. That is interesting. I'm going to have to look more into that, unless Simply New Type makes a video explaining that. Very well could. Indeed. Yeah. GM Command has very Jagan like features. Yeah. I love the evolution of those during that period.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm actually then, I'm going to do a little bit more research before I buy this to really see how accurate it is. Because I love the cost signature stuff, especially if it's like an Amaro, you know.
Yeah. It's interesting to think about Amaro in that time of UC, yeah, where it's like between Zeta and Char's counterattack, like, yeah, I mean, what would he be contributing to? And like, what mobile suit would he be piloting? Like, even if he was part of Londo Bell, theoretically speaking, they probably had Zeta pluses that he could have used from, you know, Sentinel, like, you know, from 0088, like they had the Zeta plus.
Yeah, so I wonder, is it more of where then Londo Bell was kind of like, all right, if anything happens, we have Londo Bell that knows how to fight back, and then Amaro just helps out whenever, you know, like, and that's the thing. So that, and that you see Engage, remember there was that animation that they added?
Yeah.
And I wonder if that is related to this release, you know, to kind of coincide with that. But I want to get more, like, this is the thing, like, I think with we Star Wars fans think about Luke Skywalker after the original. It's like,
yeah,
what more? Like, this is at his prime. What is he doing? You know, we didn't right, really, after Return of the Jedi, there would be so many cool Luke Skywalker stories to tell that they never did. Luckily, Mandalorian, you know, had that scene at the end of the, which I think is the best way to showcase, okay, if we were to see Luke right now, this is what you guys wanted to see. And that's like, yeah. I would rather have more story to it, but okay. So I feel the same way with Amaro. Like, even though I loved the best sequel of all time, Zeta, and how it set up its characters, it really flipped the world on its head. And we got Amaro. I want to see some more Amaro, especially something that really makes... What can they do that further informs Char's counterattack to maybe be more interesting or engaging?
Yeah, for sure.
Because I feel like there's a disconnect between what happens in Zeta with Amaro and then when we see him in Char's counterattack. Like, there is a whole other movie we didn't see with Char. I mean, it could be Char and Amaro still talking, where maybe they're still like friends and then something happens. Like, they get another... Hayato comes around and then Amaro's like, he's my friend now. No,
I don't know. I mean, like, honestly, I'm almost more interested in seeing interested in seeing Amaro's development between 0087 and 0093, because it's like, you know, Char was kind of already on that trajectory to go to begin with, but like Amaro, you know, he goes from being under house arrest to then joining, you know, Karaba and like this renegade group that is kind of undermining what the Earth Federation is doing. And then all of a sudden, yeah, they're like, let's form this Londo Bell unit and we're going to put our ace pilot Amaro Ray. Like, it seems so counterintuitive to what the Federation was all about at that time.
I am so glad you said that, because that is a part that I've never really come to terms with, because it seems like when the Earth Federation has like nefarious plans in play, like there's still Londo Bell, but does that mean Londo Bell is really the power, the boss of Earth Federation? No, but it's almost like, it's almost like they're able to keep the Earth Federation in check, but people trusted. It's almost like, to the bad guys of the Earth Federation government, you couldn't mess with Londo Bell.
Yeah.
You know, do you get what I'm saying? Is that what you're saying too?
Yeah, they're almost like the public face of the Federation that can kind of like sell that idea, like, oh no, of course we're not, you know, doing anything corrupt or manipulating anything. It's like, no, we have Londo Bell. They are our right, checks and balances. And look, we're even going to put Amaro Ray and Bright Noah, these guys that have been fighting against us for the last 2-3 years, you know, in charge of them. So then, and I know that there was like the big payoff, right? Like Amaro donated all that money to the Federation in order to create Londo Bell. But I don't think that that's, I mean, they could have just taken that money and run with it. And what would he have done? Like,
yeah. So that's what I find interesting. And the only thing that I've thought, because I think this is a really good topic that hasn't been covered a lot, and I'd actually like to hear what Kyle has to say about this, but
yeah,
because they could have just ran with it. It's like almost they're scared. Well, they changed the tide of war potentially, not knowing what, you know, Char was doing behind the scenes, killing all the siblings, but or the zombie siblings. But it's like, oh, it's a white base crew, new type. So does that mean Bright's always going to be leading an elite team, no matter what, of people that have these abilities. And
yeah,
and it wasn't it Unicorn 2 where Lando Bell then like defied what the Federation was trying to do and they were like fighting back. And then that's like, even that's crazy.
Yeah. It's pretty wild to think about, like, you know, come Unicorn time, it's almost like you have these individual ships that are almost autonomous of each other, like the Nail Argama, the Rockai Loom, and I guess they call it the General Revel, but it's a Dogos Gear class battleship. Each of those three Federation ships represented like three different goals from the Federation. Like one of them was Lando Bell, one of them was Federation, and one of them was almost associated with more like the Vist Foundation.
Very good points, because by that time, with less and less pressure from a larger, you know, the Zeon, what it could have been of the Principality of Zeon, we get like, then it's like almost like another power vacuum where then you just get little, like, and it's almost like what happened with the Titans and AU. Then you get these groups that can then just kind of form and do things. And not only that, but in the narrative, you have narrative where parts of some corporations, you got Luo and Co. also, and then you have like the sleeves, even though there's, but they're working with the Federation sometimes. So yeah, that's very interesting. After Char's counterattack, it really gets to the point where it's not about Earth Federation versus even remnants anymore. It's like groups of people with power and money and weapons. And yeah, that's a very interesting concept. I never thought about
it. I'm glad that you brought up UC Engage, because, you know, there's so many sort of bombs that UC Engage has dropped on us that just never get explained away, like the Glemmy clones.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. During Moon Gundam, is Amuro out there hunting down all of these clones of Glemmy Toto? And
yeah, I know.
Any single one of them could have posed a massive threat to any kind of Zeon, you know, autonomy. Like any kind of restoration of the Republic of Zeon would have been undermined by any one of those Glemmy clones.
Well, even Char himself might want to hunt down the Glemmy clones. Like, what if there's like, I feel like he would be willing to do that, because it's almost like he doesn't want that part of, especially if it's Garen's clone, he doesn't want that part of, you know, the Zeon to kind of emerge and be the main powerful force. That's interesting. Yeah. There's a lot more that could be dived into and talked about that hasn't been. Anyway, real quick, if anyone wants to post another show or movie.
Hey, there you go.
For the next one. This is going to be the fourth one. SD Gundam's Brave Bell. Oh my God.
I love it.
Yeah.
Three Kingdoms.
Wait a minute. So, yeah, I guess I'm going to put that at 5.
You know what? Because I'm such a huge Dynasty Warriors fan and I love the Three Kingdoms era, I'm going to call this one. Like, I love I can't tell you how many like weird fanfics I've come up with around like Liu Bei and Cao Cao and like Sun Tse and those, man.
I'm sure you should share them. Share them on your Discord.
There we go.
That was good. Someone had that Control V at the ready, and I appreciate
that. That was awesome. Yeah.
Okay, that's pretty cool. Let's see. Oh, and then we see Alter late.
As always.
But you were saying, if I recall correctly, Azizi's production notes say Glemmy is Garen's test tube baby. Yeah. So that was that. And I think it was an older video or maybe even stream where we looked at, some of those notes, and they talked about that. Although they never fully said it in the show, there was that scene when they were in Dakar, or they were in Africa.
Yeah.
And he was talking to one of his dudes and they made that mention.
Yeah, like the blue team. I think that the blue team really hyped up Glemmy on his, like, you know, hey, you actually are the heir to Zeon type thing. And it makes me wonder, because I always say this when it comes to like storytelling, is, you know, everyone kind of assumes that when someone says something in a story that it's fact, like it's canon, but like they could be lying or they could be wrong. And I wonder if like the blue team, you know, being these remnants on these Xeon remnants living on Earth felt like they were abandoned by like Haman and Axis Xeon. And so if they had access to someone that had the resources that Glemmy did, I would lie to him and say like, hey, you do realize like you're doing the bidding of this lady who does not have your best interest at heart, and you should be running Xeon. Like I would totally hype him up and make him go take her down. Like,
I'm glad you brought that up, because yet again, I've noticed lately when I watch stories, I will see something and be like, oh, that's something Steven has brought up to me. Yeah, the lying, where you don't know if the character is lying to you in the show or not. Because last X-Men episode, I was watching this breakdown and they were showing scenes where, yes, this character is actually lying.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't really know, but the guy was able to refer to the comics and be like, well, this is what happens in the comics. So, you know, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And I like when that happens, because I think that makes a story more dynamic, almost like you're on the ride and don't know what to expect. I really like that.
Okay. Yeah, I saw there was a tweet thread going around, and like I haven't been kind of watching the Fallout show at all. I'm not really into like post-apocalyptic stories in general.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's obviously like debates about lore and things like that. And they were like, well, you know, Todd Howard said that this is what happens and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, that is such a terrible way to tell a story to me. Like, when you have to explain things either as like the creator said so in an interview you know, like, maybe there's a Fortnite tie-in. I don't.
Because I feel like that's the point of that is then almost like being up for interpretation. Like, it's purposely supposed to keep you in that dynamic state of what is going on.
And that's not to say that I'm against the idea of contradictions within a story, because I think that that's where kind of the pay dirt of arguing about these things comes from. Like, you know, back in the day, I used to argue with people all the time about like, well, who would win in a fight, Iron Man or Captain America? How boring would it be if Stan Lee, you know, rest in peace, if Stan Lee came out and said, yeah, Captain America would beat Iron Man 100% of the time. It's like, well, but you didn't tell the story. Like, you didn't write that. Yeah. You're just saying that. Like, it's you
make
you
it rob compelling everyone of why. Of and even after seeing it happen, maybe that would be open up to be like, well, if this happened, maybe then he would have won. Yeah.
Yeah,
because I like that scene, like in the, I think it's the Civil War movie, when just how they filmed those two badasses having to fight each other. Like, that really felt like it, even because it's almost like it was less about who was most powerful and more about their morals emerging as they are emerging with their violence. You know, it's like, you know, and I love that. Yeah.
And you don't feel like one side is necessarily like they're equally matched. You know, a lot of times when you're watching like a superhero movie or really any action movie, you can always tell that like the good guy is slightly the underdog and like the bad guy is slightly more powerful. But when you take two good guys and you pit them against each other, you know that they're both like, it's like equals.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good stuff. That's what I mean. I even think it's done well in Gundam with Char and Amuro, you know? Yeah.
Agreed.
But you brought up something real quick when you, the post-apocalyptic thing, like, I think it's a cool idea if it's used right. Like when I first saw the Mad Max movies, like that's cool. But here's the hot take. Oh, what's that?
Or Gundam X. Like,
oh yeah. You know what? That's done well because it's almost like using that as a theme for something we already know.
Yeah. And
but here's something, I don't know if this is a hot take, but the one thing I don't like about Breath of the Wild is that it's post-apocalyptic. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because that's the easiest way to design that game. Or is that a wrong assumption?
I think that someone said this. Was it you? I feel like I was, oh man, I'm having one of those weird deja vu moments where like, I feel like someone recently said, I don't like post-apocalyptic stories because it feels like an easy way out to not have as many NPCs around. Did you say that? That might be me,
because I remember us talking about that. Yeah.
I think it was on your Blue Cast. So if you're not watching on Blue Gamer every weekday morning at 9 Eastern.
Yeah.
Like Adam does like, you know, 20, 30 minute stream just talking about gaming news, which is awesome. So
thank check you that because out. Yeah, I've been meaning to mention it now that I've kept it up for 2 weeks. Shout out to Atronimus. He was on today in chat. But
so,
anyway.
So yeah, I think that was something that you brought up was like, you know, it does feel like a conceit that is done for gaming purposes where it's like, you know, yeah, we just don't want to have NPCs everywhere. Like, and so how do you avoid that? Well, it's post-apocalyptic. Everyone's dead. So we don't have to worry about it. We can have vast swaths of unpopulated land.
Yeah. And I, again, I don't know if it's true, but it almost seems like it because there's, and I can't think, obviously there's so many games, but I really can't think of, although like even in Dragon's Dogma, when you go out and traveling, a lot of the places were destroyed by dragons.
Yeah.
Like even though there's a lot of NPCs in Dragon's Dogma.
Well, and someone, I was watching a game dev tutorial about like, you know, enemy AI, and they were like, there's a reason that most people, when they're programming their first video game, they make a zombie game. And it's because that is the easiest AI to do. You just design it to chase the player and eat them. Like there's no nuance. There's no goal orientation. Everything is like the most basic. I run to the player. I eat him. Like that's it. And when you're first designing a game, yeah, that's very simple. Same thing with like, you know, if you're going to have like a post-apocalyptic world so that you don't have to have that many characters, you know, you kind of simplify your project. But for something that's like supposed to be a AAA or quadruple A game, you would want like dynamic AI. You want things that like kind of push the boundaries of what you're expecting. Like, I would like AAA zombie games to me are, I would never play one anymore.
Yeah, the my favorite zombie game is a double A game. It's the Sniper Elite or the Zombie Army games.
Yeah.
Add more jankier, but it's all about headshots. You take them out. Like it does the thing. If it's zombies, make it like zombies.
There you go.
You know what? This reminded me of the other game. It's a game I like, Division and Division 2.
Yeah.
Great combat, but it's they make up a type of post-apocalyptic setting because there was a virus.
Right.
And it's like there's zones you can't be in too long. That doesn't happen that often, but it really doesn't affect the overall game other than less NPCs around. It gives a reason to explore that urban environment and shoot up stuff, you know.
There you go.
And real quick, if someone wants to post the final and last show or movie, and then we're gonna rate this and then see.
Oh, man.
Maybe try to defend our mistakes.
There you go.
Oh. Did someone really come in with G-Savior?
Ultronimus dropped to G-Savior. Yeah, G-Savior.
Oh, and I have to put that Three Kingdoms one in here real quick. But
oh, yeah.
Dude, I think that worked out for me. What about you?
Yeah, what mine would be 2 for G-Savior, which I was kind of planning on putting G-Savior at 2 anyway.
Oh, I love it. No, that was fun. I saw this on another podcast, although they had it where someone like auto-populated, like, and they did the whole thing then. Because I was like, everyone type in 5. And then if we go in order and we see it, then it's like, well, that removes the purpose. So I had to get creative. Right.
I like the way you did it.
Yeah, no, this was cool. So if we were to look at our list here, the funny one is, let's say, Thunderbolt and Three Kingdoms. Yeah. Luckily I had a 5 available because I've never seen it. It's SD based. I don't, you know,
what's funny is like, you know, I'm not a huge fan of like the SD, Three Kingdoms customs. Like, I think it's, if I remember correctly, it's the Wing Gundam is Cow Cow. Liu Bei is like the Unicorn Gundam, and there's like, yeah, there's designated customs of those Dynasty Warriors characters / historical figures. But I've always wanted to make my own like high grade versions of those where it's like, maybe I take the GPO-3 and turn that into Liu Bei, or like,
you know, you would use some of the stylings that are used to make it look like that character.
Yeah.
But with the proportions, but maybe make it look grounded. And it's like the Liu Bei custom or something. Yeah. That's actually a pretty neat idea. Yeah. Well, cool. That was today's episode. That was a lot of fun. You know, there wasn't too much Gundam news going on. So I was like, let's just do this random game I found in the middle of the show. I thought that was fun.
I mean, there was a lot of fun stuff to talk about. So
yeah, there was. It always ends up being like that. We got great people in the chat. So thanks for everyone in the chat. Also, there was that link, you know, that Steven shared. If you can't find the link, maybe go to the Discord, Steven's Discord. Check out his channel. It's in the description. But yeah, that Lindworm, awesome giveaway to get. So
yeah,
check that out. Anything else, Steven?
No, that's about it. I do have a special video. Actually, I think I've got two videos dropping tomorrow. I totally scheduled that wrong. Like, I'm an idiot, but you know, they're already scheduled. So what am I going to do?
In and reschedule. No, I'm joking.
No. We're going to reward everyone for this 4,000 sub thing. Cool. So I've got two videos coming out tomorrow. One is on you know, some Gunpla stuff, just a quick Gunpla tip, and the other is a update on Gundam 5E. So
sweet. Oh, something to look forward to tomorrow. So that's awesome.
Keep you guys entertained.
Yeah, that's awesome. So yeah, thanks everyone. Thanks, Steven. Everyone have a good day, good weekend. We'll see you next time. Peace out.
Cheers.